come from the north of Africa. He's a new director general. He's accompanied by acting PDG, but there's no more acting PDG. Ms. Jordan, the acting PDG, international, and my old friend there is the chief director. Dealing with international issues. I see there are also my friends here. I don't think they came for the agenda items I'm coming for. I see the share of Santan and the CEO and the other senior officials. Chairperson, maybe just to introduce myself. I'm just kind of out of cabinet. I still have to go back because there's a cabinet meeting going on. But I thought it's important just to come and introduce the very capable senior officials and maybe be there for. At 11, I'm supposed to go back, and so that you can understand, because there are other items which are very, very close to us. But I'll be here. There are two international conventions we want the parliament to approve. And let me also thank you for prioritizing this. Last year, we dealt in 2015, JDRC. Then we went to 2012 regulation. We seem to be going backwards. And today we'll go to 2010 first, then go to 1999.
But at least we're moving forward.
We are moving. But just to say this, we introduced the last year other convention. It is important that once we have all the ratifications, we must get Parliament's approval for this convention so that we can find way of domesticating and making them applicable by force. It's a certain element which are critical to us in South Africa. We apologize that some of these things found some delay. It was not necessarily due to inefficiency. As you will see on the 1999 one, because some of the legal structures we're still dealing with in terms of the R2, which was a specialized agency of the OAU, and with the formation of the AU itself, when changing the legal structures of the AU and how they relate to these entities. So we needed clarity working with DECO, State Attorney's Office, to make sure that we're all aligned. But on the 2012 ITU conference, which was in Mexico, there are many issues that brief us with, but it is important because these things tend to build on one another. In terms of the regulations were approved, they were first discussed in this, to say we must have regulations which are applicable and the standards which are applicable to all countries, so that it levels the playing field. Just also to say, and they deal with the details, there were very important things which are introduced in that. The health issues were started to be introduced, and the officials would deal with whether it's waste, whether it's the environmental impacts of these things were introduced in that conference. So that we must start looking for graveyards and the protection of humans for these gadgets, because you normally give it to your grandparents, and the grandparents, they are the ones who are left with dumping of this. And they do have an environmental impact. So the issues of protection of child online on the internet, having uniform standards, they all arise from there, and then they've been developing over years. And I think in our situation we find today, these things become relevant. I'm not going to talk about the hate speech, Mr. Julius, which is so prevalent nowadays over this web. But those are the things we continue to grapple with as we go to WCR19. The issues of cyber security, which we continue, as you know, about 2 years ago, we started forming our own national cyber security hub, which is housed at the CSIR, by grant by us, to make sure that we start responding to these new threats, because internet is useful, but these irritants, we must be able to manage them so that we protect our people. So I thought I should just introduce those and to say, one may argue, why bringing these things now? Are they not overtaken by that? They are still quite relevant. The unfortunate delay was one on the ITU because of the legal thing, but it's still quite relevant because we are part of the AU. It also helps to coordinate us in Africa. As we said before, in this international game, you need alliances, not good alliances, not democratic alliances. Just alliance. As African countries, it is very important that we have a voice. As we said before, we belong to this club called Region 1 in terms of ITU. It's a very difficult club because it's got Africa, which is underdeveloped, and the other side, they've got Europe, which is far advanced, with a more advanced network, more advanced application. And they tend to push the things which will favor Europe. And they tend to have a very strong united voice. And as Africa before, we used to be somehow disjointed. So it's very important that as an African group, whether through the AU or ITU, ATU, we form that coherent group to push the African agenda for development, in line with the agenda 2063, which has been put by the continent. I thought I should just put those, and then if you do permit a chair, then allow the officials to deal with the agenda items.
Thank you very much.
Honorable
Minister,
Honorable
apologies from the Deputy Minister, Professor Mukiti, Honorable Kofi, and Honorable Lovett Scott. Welcome, Honorable Minister, can you please introduce yourself, because we were sitting with a brand new DG, and he don't know us all. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My apologies, Chair, to our audience. My name is Bukiswa Yota. I'm coming from SNP. Thank you.
And a very special Honorable Singh, you also.
Thank you. My apologies for being late. I come from the beautiful province that the minister comes from, KZN.
Thank you. Those are the team. I believe we are the 18 ministers.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Yeah. I forgot that I'm an ex-member of the SOC. We were the first group of SOC members.
Okay.
But so we also had a chance of being called senators. Before it was changed to more progressive NCOT.
Thank you, Minister, for acknowledging that we are more progressive. You know, when before that time, when I normally come to the debate here in NCOT, I was saying, oh, I will never be able to be in the NCOT. It's just the open. But that was a perception. Minister, thank you, and a special word of welcome to the new DG Mukuna. Welcome to our committee. Me and you have a little chat in the corner, and that's how we are going to deal with things. And I need you to intervene in that, what I was whispering with you. Otherwise, I'm going to bring it here in a formal meeting. Fireworks. Thank you. With that, I'm going to give over to the department. Thank you for your kind words, and we will we take note that you are going to leave for other commitments, Minister.
Later.
You are later. If you feel like going, you can just fire. Thank you. Over to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, for the warm words of welcome. I've already had a baptism of fire with the chairperson. She put me to the corner there and gave me some few tasks that if I perform them well in the course of this week and report to you as the chairperson, then I'm going to pass my probation in one day. So I'm doing that with the arrangement. Without much ado, I will ask my colleague, who is our DDG for International Relations, John Tuvera Jordan, to present on the ITU. I'm not sure what we're going to do, whether we take both presentations or we discuss one by one.
Yeah, I think we can do both, take both and then we can ask questions.
Okay, not that much. Yeah, so what's your
thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Members. Good morning to the Minister and to the Members present. The first presentation, Honourable Chair, would be on the ratification of the African Telecommunications Union, the Convention of 1999, which coincidentally was passed in our show here in Cape Town when we hosted the extraordinary plenipotentiary meeting. Our purpose is therefore to request Parliament to consider and support the ratification of the African Telecommunications Union, which South Africa became a signatory of, and this is done in line with Section 231 of our Constitution. As a brief background, Chair, ATU was founded in 1977 as the specialized agency of the then Organization of the African Union, UNITU. Following South Africa's independence in 1994, there were decisions to take up membership to join ATU in line with our foreign policy objective of pursuing developmental agenda, as well as promoting the African relations at that time, including now with strengthening the African institutions, as well as prioritizing Africa. Honorable members, South Africa, we stand as one of 45 member states of ATU. We also just heard that yesterday Namibia Parliament recently endorsed for them to join, so they'll be the 46th member. That is progress, thank you, Chair. So we signed the African Telecommunications Convention when we hosted this extraordinary plenipotentiary conference in Cape Town. That was also the same period that ATU was being transformed from what was the Pan-African Telecommunications Union, which was just a member body for member states, to what it is today, where it includes both public and private member participation. Chair, the Minister alluded to the issue as to why we are ratifying now. We, as the department, went through a very exhaustive legal clarity and engagement with both the Department of International Relations and Cooperation as well as Justice. Because at the time that South Africa signed the convention, the OAU was in existence. However, as you know, that the AU came into existence in 2002. And within the AU Constitutive Act, there is no reference to specialized technical agencies, only specialized technical committees, which is constituted by member states. So we needed legal clarity as to what then, you know, South Africa in terms of its recognition and status. The legal opinion, I think, is attached in terms of the submissions that we submitted. And it does indicate that because the body was in existence, and also the AU recognizes some of the Abuja treaties, which obviously then makes reference to those specialized technical agencies. We also believe that ARTU is closely aligned to our own national development plan, especially when you look at Chapter 4 and Chapter 7, where you look at the rapid infrastructure development, as well as obviously the international agenda. Some of the benefits that we see as to why South Africa should continue being a member and why we should ratify this. Firstly, as the minister indicated, there is an interlinkage between the regional body ARTU as well as the global institution responsible for ITU under the UN, which is the International Telecommunications Union. ARTU coordinates the member states in Africa when it comes to the international fora. And I think as an Africa group, we are very solid in terms of positioning. As you'll recall, when you made a presentation on the ratification of the final acts of the World Radio Conference, Africa was successful in achieving, and we were the most high in terms of the number of spectrum bands that we were able to win as a continent. But we also see the importance of ARTU for us in South Africa to advance our own satellite ambitions in the ITU. Because any member country that is wanting to launch a satellite, the application needs to be made with the ITU, and it must receive the support and the endorsement of the members, especially from the regions or where then there's going to be geographic coverage. And for ARTU provides that network for us then to engage and to seek that particular support. With regards to infrastructure, honorable members, you would find that under the ARTU, there is a coordination of ICT infrastructure programs and priorities, mainly the submarine cables, the terrestrial networks, the satellite technology that I just spoke to, as well as to ensure that there is effective interconnectivity within countries and between countries, as well as within regions and continents. ARTU also has a human resource development program where it looks at providing capacity to member states, for example, in areas of spectrum, in areas of satellite. Now and again, I think almost minimum is 4 training programs in an annual period that will be provided to member states. It also looks within partners as well, where it can also share in terms of knowledge and best practice, and then seeing the availability of their skills to assist with research areas. With regard to business and industry development, as I indicated that when it was transformed in 1999, we saw an emergence of quite a number of what we call associations and active participation from the industry. And this has assisted to make sure that there's a collective position, and therefore when you do adopt positions, private sector is there to assist with the implementation, and it actually encourages their participation. With regard to ICT content development, ARTU emphasizes on the need for local content. As you know that our continent is rich with regard to diverse heritage and diversity. And therefore it wants to ensure that the benefits of ICTs are not seen to be hindered by, you know, whether it's going to be cultural as well as heritage issues as well as the content, not language issues. ARTU for us in South Africa, think mostly is that we would like to use it as an influential platform for telecommunications and ICT development agenda within the continent. We remain very active as South Africa. We've been serving in the Administrative Council since 2010, and we would like to continue to ensure that South Africa is actively participating to shape the decisions and the outcomes in favor of our own national interests. Honorable members, with regards to financial implications of the ratification, there would be none. However, as obviously members, as a member state and maybe also the Administrative Council, we hosted in 2015, when we were chairing the Administrative Council, the Administrative Council meeting. Now and again, we also would identify those strategic meetings as South Africa that we would want perhaps then to host in order for us then again to shape the outcomes of that. The department, on behalf of the Republic, we are paying a $75,000 membership annually. And I must also indicate that we took a decision as a department to review our membership in light of the current global economic crisis. Prior to 2014, when we went to the planning board, South Africa was paying $86,500. So we reduced that. But what we did to compensate for that gap is that we actually took up membership from the private sector in South Africa. So both MTN and Vodacom are now associate members of R2. And therefore now South Africa actually is sitting at an overall contribution of close to $100,000. And we're trying to also encourage other members to also join. With regards to the implementation, as it's standard and regulated, we're guided by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors on the ratification process, of which we have duly complied with. And the department, as in terms of organizational personnel implications, we cater for this within our APP targets, and that they are therefore the relevant resources that have been allocated. The constitutional issues, I think, Chair, are to obviously promote issues of inclusivity as well as ensuring that people with disability as well youth and programs are being championed. And lastly, with regards to security implications, whilst we deal with programs such as cybersecurity, the ratification itself has no security implications. And Chair, would like to humbly request that the Select Committee considers the ratification in line with Section 231. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. I'll be presenting on the 2010 Plenipotentiary Conference, which took place in Guadalajara in Mexico for the International Telecommunications Union. And again, our request is that Parliament would consider, support and approve the ratification of the final acts of the Plenipotentiary Conference. Just to explain briefly the background, the ITU has something called a federal structure, where it has a radio communications sector, a development sector, and a standardization sector. But the overall governing body of the ITU is the Plenipotentiary Conference, which meets once every 4 years. And this sets out the policies, the financial planning, and the strategic goals of the union. In between Plenipotentiary Conferences, we have an ITU Council, which is an elected body which represents the interests of the membership. That is the purpose for which they're elected. And that plays a key role then in articulating the decisions of the Plenipotentiary Conference. The work of the ITU aligns closely with our National Development Plan, especially in relation to economic infrastructure in the ICT sector. So ratifying the final acts would be in line with our foreign policy and in line with the National Development Plan. In terms of the foreign policy, our commitment is to
try and strengthen the rules-based multilateral system. We believe this system is in the interest of developing countries and smaller nations. It mitigates against the power of unilateral actions, especially by stronger bodies and groupings and countries, individual countries. So it's a very important check in the global system. So we'll just go through some of the key issues that were discussed and debated during the plenipotentiary conference. I should just note at the beginning that many of the decisions are reflected in the different sectors of the ITU. So what happens is certain issues get prioritized for the plenipotentiary conference. But in terms of the standardization work or the radio communications work or the development work, there's a lot more detail. It's a very intricate and process. So what gets reflected in the plenipotentiary conference is normally things that are seen as a priority by member states. And one of the key issues, of course, was around cybersecurity. The ITU has developed the global cybersecurity agenda to help member states deal with all of the problems involved in building their networks, because most countries were developing national broadband networks and they're developing their internet capacity. So the immediate challenge is then how do you respond to what are the cybersecurity threats that you have to address. One of the things was working with an organization called IMPACT through a memorandum of understanding to develop what are called CERTs, Computer Emergency Response Teams, or Computer Security Incident Response Teams, depending on, it's two acronyms which are pronounced the same and mean quite similar things. So this was to help countries develop these systems so that they can monitor their networks and intervene where necessary. So when countries, for example, are attacked in cyberspace, I think it happened to Malaysia quite recently, they have an infrastructure in place to try and respond and mitigate against those threats. Another key issue that comes up in the ITU is the question of internet addressing. Historically, this resolution was there to respond to concerns the countries had around how their country code domain names on the internet were allocated. So it was really a statement to say that countries need to be consulted in terms of how these addresses are allocated. It's an area of tension between the ITU and the ICANN, Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. And I guess this resolution is a result of the fact, in a sense, that the ITU is a UN body representing member states, whereas ICANN is more of a private institution which is involved in policy around the public good, which is the internet. The minister also mentioned the International Telecommunications Regulations, which Parliament considered and ratified last year. That had been an ongoing debate in the ITU because the original ITRs were signed in 1988 in Australia. They were first debated about updating and updating those International Telecommunication Regulations in 1998, that was 10 years later. And we had to wait until 2012 to actually have a conference. But at this plenipotentiary conference, key progress was made because they were able to agree an agenda and they were able to agree that that the ITRs shouldn't just be limited to existing resolutions or articles of the ITRs, but it should include new and emerging issues, which is very important because obviously the world of ICT has completely transformed since 1988 because they were dealing with landlines and very little internet and mobile phones were not really very prevalent. So everything had changed in the ICT space. So it was very important to be able to address all of those issues. But it was quite a controversial process, so it took a long time. We looked at internet protocol-based networks and issues around internet public policy, and some key decisions were taken here to set up a dedicated group within the ITU that would consider internet public policy and allow member states to discuss these issues. They also looked at the management of internationalized domain names so that you can have domain names that are in different languages across the world. So that was also addressed. Another important area was conformance and interoperability. This is to do, it relates to the bullet that follows on standardization gap. This is to really build capacity in developing countries to be able to address standards in the ICT sector. A large part of the work of the ITU would be to make sure that there's interoperability and conformance to certain standards in terms of ICT equipment, especially around how they communicate and interoperate with each other. So building capacity for individual countries to be able to test equipment and participate in the standards making process to make sure that developing country interests were represented in the formation of standards. This is an important resolution. Then there's human exposure to and measurement of electromagnetic fields. It's an area of considerable caution. There's often been discussion about what would be the impact of electromagnetic fields on human beings, especially on the brain. I think the group hasn't really, they work very closely with the World Health Organization. And generally they set standards around what's an acceptable exposure level, not just for handsets, but for base stations and other kind of ICT infrastructure. So they monitor and study that area. And I think the minister had mentioned child online protection. This is a critical area. The ITU produces best practice information packs for helping countries to respond to their concerns around child online protection, for raising awareness. So that's a product that's produced for member states to benefit from. Another critical area is the role of telecommunications and ICT on climate change and protection of the environment. There are several different issues here. I think the first is, of course, the efficient use of resources like energy. Using ICT to make sure that we use our energy resources more efficiently and therefore are able to protect the environment by more careful and efficient use. But then other parts also relate to how you dispose of ICT equipment and how you address issues around recycling. We also looked at future conferences and assemblies and the forums of the Union. That included the World Conference on International Telecommunications, which followed 2 years later to address the international telecommunication regulations, but I've already mentioned that. Then we looked at the ITU Telecom World Events, which focuses on, this is an international forum that's held by the ITU, together with, what do you call these things, exhibitions. So it was looking at the themes and also the technological development and market trends. And the key resolution here was that revenues that are generated by Telecom World should be used in the ICT Development Fund to support the development agenda of the ITU. And then another important resolution was free online access to ITU publications. The ITU produces a huge amount of publications across the three different sectors, sometimes specializing on things like cybersecurity or child online protection, or it could be around developing infrastructure around the internet, and also the decisions around standardization and the use of radio spectrum. So all of these publications, many of them have been made available for free. So this was helping developing countries to access all of the information that's generated by the ITU. This actually worked out quite well for the ITU because they started generating more money from selling the hard copies as a result of interest that was generated by people being able to access information online. The ITU, as I mentioned before, it has three main sectors. So what they normally do is they allow private companies to join those sectors for a fee. And that's one of the ways of generating revenue within the ITU. But now what was important was that it's very difficult very often for developing countries, for the private sector in developing countries to necessarily pay the full amount to participate. So they've made it cheaper for sector members from developing countries to participate in the radio sector and the standardization sector. ITUT is the standardization sector. Independent Management Advisory Committee is a UN body which looks at different UN institutions and how they're run. They developed a very comprehensive report for the ITU, and this was mostly included in the resolution that responded to that. So it was just to help the ITU improve how it functions and operates. The call to Cancun, that was again the environment. So it was really calling on member states to participate in the World Environmental Conference and to highlight the use of ICTs in addressing environmental challenges. South Africa was very active in the conference on internet governance issues, especially. We played a leadership role on Child Online, on the free access to ICT publications. Also, we were active on performance and interoperability issues. So then, to finalize the presentation, I think in terms of financial implications, there is no financial implications directly for ratifying the treaty. We obviously do pay a membership, as Norfolk also applied with our membership of ARTU. So the current membership is 1,272,000 Swiss francs per year. Constitutional implications, the treaty is binding on all signatories. Most of the resolutions are not actually binding on member states because they're optional, but the treaty in terms of how the ITU is run, the Constitution and Convention, which deals with how member states relate to each other, that is binding. Okay, those are really most of the issues. Okay, just to finalize then, obviously we're requesting the support of Parliament to ratify Plenipotentiary Conference 2010. And this will help ensure that we're in very good standing within the ITU. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Is there any questions? I'm struggling with your username, so please.
Me too.
You want to post a question?
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Let me also join you to welcome the new DG, Mr. Nkuna, and explain upfront that as long as you are going to always lead your team in a way yourself, you won't have challenges. It is going to be very simple. And if whatever what was discussed in the corner you're going to speak with it, you won't have some problems.
I'm going to share with you.
And sometimes we fight and argue, Minister. We comment even if you have got some engagement, and you see that it's important to attend the committee because it's making our lives to be much more easier. And when we've got some questions and we have to do interaction with the department, you are making our lives to be much more easier. We commend you for that. Let me indicate, Chair, that I'm supporting the ratification, but I'll just ask a few clarity questions. The first one, well, I won't get to the details of the background because the minister clarified the rationale behind the delay. But the first one is because the constitution is very clear that for an international agreement to bind our country, both houses, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, must be able to have that resolution as we are quoting that section 231, subsection 2. Not unless it's subsection 3, then that's a different matter, it's a technical one, that's an issue of anxiety. But now we're dealing with subsection 2. So it's an interest to understand when, are you starting from us as a select committee, or was it finalized by the other house? out of interest, they both what was presented. Then the second one, well, it's an advice. You are making, if you are presenting something, the DG, when you have, whether it's Kwacha or Pula or Dollars, because in South Africa you're using rent, you are making our lives easier as MPs to relate to us in terms of rents. Of course, you can indicate that it's $72,000, but reflect it in rent so that we have a better understanding. And that was in both the presentation. I saw even the one in Swiss, in Kwacha, and the one of US dollars. So you are forcing us to take a calculator, do a calculation, go to internet, and miss a very important part that you are presenting. The last one, it's about the last presentation. As I said, the minister was very clear to outline the rationale behind it today. So it was going to do much good to the last presentation to get rid of some of the things that are not relevant, like saying, no, the key priority is dealing with issues of 2012, 2014, the conference of 2012. I don't think those lies were necessary, because it's like we're discussing it immediately after 2010. And now any person that will look at it and us as committee dealing with it now will say, did these people miss this date? Why are they allowing them to prioritize things for the year that has been gone? So it's not making sense. So we can get rid of those sentences in those lies. Otherwise, I'm supporting and I agree with the rationale behind it, except those advices that I'm giving to the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Member.
Honorable Tony. South Africa,
very easy for me.
You can use the old
name.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The reason I say me too is because I introduced myself as Mokosi. I realized after that. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the two presentations. My questions are based on the first presentation. How sure are we that the implementation of the R2 is not only to better the lives of the rich? By the rich, I think you know who I'm referring to. Number two, how do the poor of the poorest, or how will they benefit from this implementation of R2? Because even still to date, we still have people without television. The third one is not a question, it's not even based on the presentation, but it's based on the introduction. I forgot your surname, my sister, it said?
Jordan.
Jordan. Okay. Thank you very much. You've been doing a very good job, your presentation, since I started with this committee, and you've been acting for a very long time. So I would appeal with the minister to see to it that you stop acting. Yes. Because you are a woman, and a black woman above everything else. Thank you very much.
Chair, I'm thinking, when she said me too, is telling us that sometimes it's forgetting that it's very.
No,
thank you, Chairperson. How confused with this marriage. I also didn't get my name. For me, it's not a marriage issue. But then I
attracted to first, someone here, you
don't get. Chairperson, just one or two questions. On the first presentation, basically pertaining to both of them, since this is a new comment and we haven't been here that time, and this was actually first presented just the full power, who was it vested in at that time on both these conferences? And why is there a need for full power? Just to take us back to explain, you know, why is there a need for full power vested in a person to represent government at this conference? Especially explain the independent part of it, because that's what I understand out of this thing, is that a person will have independent power to represent government there. Then on the third last page of the first presentation, 75,000 dollars that we pay per annum, but you also mentioned that we are also the administration agent of ATU. How much money do we spend on that? Can we just calculate the cost? How much does it cost us actually per annum in total to run the operation? I'm not saying we mustn't do it. I just thought that, you know, that information should have been included in here. We are running the operation, but at least take us into your conference to say how much it is it, so that we can also have clarity in our minds with a clear conscience also. And then, Chairperson, on the second one, also one or two questions. The resolutions of I-2. I think to what you're asking Parliament to do is to consider, approve, and support. That would mean to me that we must have a thorough understanding of what was resolved. What were the resolutions here? Out of your presentation, you know, I know there's another one, but out of this presentation, you know, we can't really see the resolutions. It must be explained. There are lots of other resolutions. We cannot ratify something that we don't know. There are certain resolutions that speaks to empowerment of women. There are resolutions that speaks to other nations that we are supporting that still do not have status in the country, like Palestine, Serbia, and so forth. There are, those are important resolutions that I think should have been presented to us. I don't know how many resolutions there are, but when I look through your presentation, it's a synopsis of this. Now, in my mind, I need to be confident, you know, that the resolutions, because we are ratifying the resolutions, not the fact that someone read them. We are ratifying the resolution, the outcome. But I can't see it yet. There is a notice, and I can't really, Chairperson, really make up my mind, you know. There were even declarations. There were reservations from other countries. It's not included yet. How can one make up your mind, really, to say that let's rectify and you do not have all the information? Can you just clear my mind that maybe I am wrong? Maybe it was done before, but seeing that we are doing it now, I think it should have been included. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you very much, Chair. Mine on slide number one. I think I really support first the declaration. The ratification. Because we're talking about the I want to also check, take it further, the issue of the messages.
that you know that we are the country that is forever complaining about high rates of unemployment. So would like to know, in terms of this, will it help us to get it done? And on the second one, Chair, there's a mention that there are no security risks, am I correct? Implications, if you like. That's your. Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that? For the issue of security is key for us. And I looked at one of the second slide was talking about development fund. Yes. And I have noticed, I just quickly went through your one of the documents that talk about it talks about funding for the climate change. So I would like to know who qualifies to access that particular fund. Because currently we are facing a lot of climate change challenges, especially in municipalities. So that's why I'm asking that question. Who qualifies to benefit from that?
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Papa.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think there are quite a number of questions that my Honorable colleagues have answered. But let me just check on the membership fees paid by member states and associates. Let's say maybe South Africa is paying membership. The associates, are we also talking of the GM, Vodacom, as associates of the
Thank you very much. And are there any other questions? If not, I'm not going to repeat what I said now. Can I give over to the team to respond on the first? Honorable Minister, you are okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I think the detailed question the officer can attend to there. Maybe just on the issue on how we handle the matter between the houses. The instruments like this are tabled at the same time to the NSOP and the National Assembly. If I remember well, the first meeting in the National Assembly was the 24th, and the NSOP was supposed to be 25th. I think it was postponed because of other commitments we had. So both houses are dealing with them at the same time, like we did last year. So we hope that we can then finalize them, because once the both houses are concurred, then we can then ratify, finalize the process. Right? The issue of benefits, I think the officer can deal with that in detail. What are we ratifying? We're ratifying the convention that we are members, only the convention. Not the other things, there are many things which are taken when you have got a contract. Those normally are tabled either through when you come back from those conferences, the reports are normally tabled, come back and you can also table them to Parliament just to brief the details what was discussed in that particular conference. But here we are just ratifying the convention that we become members. and the convention with that. But the other things which were discussed that the officials can explain, I think very important. The benefits to the poor, of course, whatever we do it to advance the economic development and our national interest and the best. And our national interest and economic development of Africa. That's what drives our participation, and that's what is at the core of our foreign policy. As you remember, foreign policy is to advance our domestic policy, which is empowerment of the flag, participation of others, and ensuring that the benefits are true to all citizens, not only those who can afford. That approach we normally take when we go to this convention. And that's why we normally consult widely just beyond the cabinet before we go to participate in any of the international events and have input from all different key stakeholders. just on the security implications, it's just that there are these standard formats. The aim of that session, if you introduce anything to Parliament or Cabinet, you must disclose upfront if it's going to have implications on our national security. when we say there's no security implication, we don't think that our national security will become weaker just by adopting this. But of course, if you protect the vulnerable group, like children and so on, somehow indirectly you enhance the security of the nation, but it's got no direct impact on the national security. We always also say that we have any constitutional implication. We say no, but it is in hands of the Constitution that we must ratify, Parliament must ratify. But if we take anything which will make us have to change our Constitution, that's a requirement that we must disclose upfront if this thing may require us to change our Constitution. So that when you take that decision, you are fully aware of all the information. From what we are assessing here is that there is no direct security implication that our national security is much weaker if we take or ratify this convention. But the officials can deal with the other details.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Nyan, we take the advice about the use of the currencies. I think that it's pretty obvious that we should do that. So we've taken that into consideration. The minister has already indicated that we have presented this to the Constitutional Committee in Jan. So that has already been done. In terms of whether, how does ARTU empower the poor? The agenda of ARTU is inherently about Africa. So it's all about Africa. That is the business that we discussed there in ARTU. And the issue of access to infrastructure and services is very topical in the discussions of ARTU, amongst other issues that have been discussed. Now, talking about ARTU, one of the challenges that we need to attend to as a country is that we have been party to all these organizations with all these global ideas. One of the things that we need to do is also to get South Africans to work in those organizations. When you look at these many organizations that we are part of, we push all this progressive agenda, but when you look at the people who work there, starting with SADC, we do not have South Africans. And I'm not talking about people who are here, but even people who are just South Africans who work in those institutions. So I wish to believe that in our next engagement, this issue will also arise as to what is the strategy of government to ensure that we don't only contribute to policy and membership, paying membership fees, but we also ensure that South Africans are there. So we're obviously going to look into that. On the position of BDG International, I must say that we have advertised the post. So we are attending to that. I may not be in a position to say who's going to get that position, but we are most sincerely working on that, and the issue of women empowerment is uppermost in the agenda of the department. But I cannot say what will happen if, you know, that maybe Minister.
No, as we said, we have done the right thing. We have advertised the post. All the willing and capable were encouraged to apply. And then what will determine then is the process of whether you are meeting those requirements, because we have to meet the minimum requirements. Two, we have to demonstrate capacity when we are first. The position of the BDG and DGs, they are not handled by him in terms of our cabinet convention. It's a minister working with other ministers from other departments, with other senior officials from other departments, so that there is fairness, and because it's quite senior policy. So we wish if all the incumbents, because they may be members who have applied, all the incumbents who have applied, we wish them well, and would like to prioritize this post filling. As you know, we've still got quite a number of senior vacancies. So I think we've got 3 DBGs.
Yes.
The challenge we continue to face, Chairperson, because we must. You know, as the members of the executive, ministers have got nothing while we employ these people. When they are fired, we've got absolutely nothing to do with it.
Sure.
They fired each other. But when we employ, it's a very anomalous thing. When we're employing, we're there, we do interviews, we take to a cabinet and approve, cabinet approve. But when they fire each other, they don't even take cabinet on board. It's because of the current collective bargaining arrangement. They have voted us there in the collective bargaining, saying ministers must not be collective board. So now when they fire each other, they condemn each other. As you know, some of the DGs were terminated. So they've been contesting each other in the bargaining council, in the court, and somehow indirectly we are being brought in. Is that thing. And sometimes we're threatened, if you make an appointment, I'll take you to court. And lawyers will write to us. So it just makes our work a little bit difficult. But it is difficult to run a department without senior officials.
That's true.
You can never meet your targets, you can never have a proper leadership to implement this thing. Actors are just actors. yes, they can't commit. They can't put their neck on the block because they're just acting. If we were DG, you know, we know who to shoot. If the summer is short, so that's an approach we're taking. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Minister. Just maybe the Chairperson will dispose of a few questions on my side, and the colleagues will conclude. I think on the powers and independence of USAI, that is done obviously in terms of the constitution, that the relevant member of the executive has been assigned to sign all international instruments. Now, in terms of resolutions of actually the minister has indicated that we take resolutions from time to time, and we can always share with the parliament, even if it's not in the form of a presentation like this, but if we need to share some of the pertinent issues that are being discussed, that we can always do.
Maybe just on this signing thing, Like I said, before we go to this conference, we get a mandate, because you don't go and represent your views. You first go to cabinet and ask for a mandate for your participation, because you know the issues you're going to be discussed. And the cabinet takes the final decision on what is the mandate of that country. And once that mandate is given, whoever then leads the delegation must stick to that mandate. If there are changes, before you agree to any changes, you must hold no. And because we are committing the country. Because we are representing the country, the president must sign an authorization letter that you are the mandated official to sign this document on behalf of the country, because we are committing the whole country. So if you don't have that letter, you can't sign anything. So it's a well-known convention that you must present a letter with a seal from the president that we are truly authorized to take such decisions. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Minister. Chairperson, in terms of the documentation, if I can go quickly, we submitted, I'm told, about 400 pages of the two topics to Parliament. And then in terms of other countries, we've indicated that in 400 pages that have been submitted to Parliament. Now, in terms of other countries, how they relate to ATO, all we can say at this stage is that 46 countries are members of ATO. Yeah, as things stand currently, 46 members are involved in ATO. Now, on the question around employment, whether our participation in this international organization contributes to employment, one of the things that we're trying to do now, we just finalized an SMME strategy, that's for South Africa. And what is then saying is, we participate in many organizations. How are we going to take this SMME strategy and use it in our engagement with other countries? So the strategy that we have as a department is to ensure that the things that we want to do here at home, we also find a way to internationalize them in our engagement with other countries, such as in the Greek. And that's obviously one of the areas we can engage on going forward. And lastly, I think we indicated that in both ATO and the ITU, the issue of security is pertinent. Cyber security, the protection of minors, those issues are pertinent and we are dealing with them. And we have also domesticated those instruments in respect to security.
Thank you very much. Those are the points. I don't have questions. Well, there is an outstanding just to Chair, thank you very much to the Minister and to the DG for responding to the rest of the question. I think the DG alluded in terms of the socioeconomic impact that we are really looking at transforming, and the Minister talked to it that we're part of Region 1 at the ITU. So most of the time we find that within the Africa group, we aim to make sure that there is an emergence of new players in the electronic manufacturing space, which is what the DG talked about in the SMME. We want to make sure that we build our own capabilities, hence South Africa wants its own satellite capabilities for both for security reasons, but to also provide services to the remote areas as well. So those are some of the programs that we want, and that's why we see our participation within ATO. And then, Honorable Julius, the total cost in total, obviously, along with the membership contribution, both ITU as well as ATO, they have normal meetings. So there will be an administrative council that takes place annually, of which I indicated that South Africa is a member of, that we will need to participate. Those costs obviously vary from year to year because we would find that the value change is according to who's hosting which country. But on average, I think we do spend, together with our membership contributions, which is about 800,000 for South African rand, we spend close to about 1.2 million overall in the ATU program. As I indicated, some of them, when we go to meetings, preparations for the WRC, they've already started for the World Radio Conference in 2019. So we send technical experts to participate in those particular meetings to make sure that we defend our national position. And then with regard to the development fund that was asked by Honorable Nita, the fund unfortunately is going for the least developed countries. So these are our neighbors, Swaziland, Lesotho, Malawi. So we do not get access. However, there are what we call study groups within the ITU. So this is where issues that are pertinent to us, we actually table them to make sure that within a cycle, which is a four-year cycle, we actually study them. And we have technical, we therefore get technical experts from across the world to actually make sure that we do thorough investigations of the issues before a resolution is taken. So even these resolutions and declarations, you would find that at the minimum it's 2 years or up to even 4 year cycle that there's actual in-depth analysis of whether in terms of that particular resolution at the end. So we make sure, again, it's important for us to participate in those so that we'll be able to influence the outcomes of that. So whilst we do not benefit directly in the development fund, we do make sure that in the study groups, the technical issues that are important to the country, we put forward. On the associate membership, the associate members also do pay. And you decide on each category, each person. So I do know, I'm not so sure whether it's empty or open, but that they pay 10,000 and the other one is paying 10,000. So you decide in which scale you would like to contribute as an associate member and similarly as a whole member state. I think those are the questions.
Thank you very much. I think we're done. I'm not going to say, but I think this is important for us to be part of conventions in the world so that we can competing out there. And the infrastructure development, we saw what is going on big time. I raised that one issue, I raised it just that we must make sure that we're doing what we are tasked with and by localization, making use of local people to do the work, not bringing in people from other places where there is opportunities for our own people to take part in the work. We are done with the two presentations. Can we go to the...
Can you allow me a follow-up?
Okay.
sorry for this, man. But Honorable Minister, I cannot comprehend the reasoning behind the ratification of the convention. Because it's not an occasion. We cannot ratify an occasion. We've been there ratifying. Because we have a discussion. We have a discussion on the content. And that's where my problem is. If you don't have the content, the full content, how can you expect me to ratify? Because when I ratify, I give formal consent. And according to section 231 of the Constitution, it will bind the Republic. If the NCOP ratifies and the NA ratifies, it will be binding on us. But I didn't see a resolution. And I'm sorry, you send it to us, I didn't see it. You understand? So maybe that's another problem. For now, really, Jefferson, I cannot say that I'm truly comfortable in doing this. A convention is a discussion that you have on content, not on a date and a place, like to say, we're there, we are, we are, that I I cannot comprehend what you explained to me. Cannot rectify a contention that there's nothing in it. We can rectify the contention, but my position is on the, it has to do with context. It's all about the context. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As you said, the convention in this document is very clear and detailed. What we did with presentation, we're trying to clarify why is it important for us to, and what benefits are there for us if we can rectify. These were just initial. Yeah, just remember that to actually make these conventions that we can implement, then you need ratification from Parliament. As you said, Honorable Julius, the details about the if you look at this document, it shows that there were about 26 countries which signed them but didn't ratify. They didn't have much reservation. The reservation arose when we're starting to find the processes here in South Africa. To say, what does the ATU mean in relation to AU structure? And that's what kept us holding until, if you look at the legal opinions and the letter from the before and so on. It's what we're trying to resolve so that we don't have confusing, because we also ratify the AU convention, which was held here in South Africa. So, but the actual, what has been the work of the ATU since it was formed, their resolution they take, their programs they are running, and we can give the details of those programs to the members if they require them, and we said we can give that. If we go to their meeting, we go there with a clear mandate, and when we come back, we say things we've won, the things which we didn't win, but we usually win most of the things in favor of what South Africa is putting. So that would be my feel that if the members do need additional information, that information can be given. But what is relevant for the convention is what we have provided so far. And I think the officials have committed that they can give additional information.
Over to you.
Okay, just a quick one, Chair. I think by the convention in this case does not refer to an event. It refers to a standing document, so it's a constitution. So what we're reporting on at this stage is not about any meeting with respect to ATU, but we are asking Parliament to accept a constitution which is also called a convention. So that's what we are talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we proceed by adopting the report? The first report of the ATU, the Select Committee on Communications and Public Enterprises has considered the request for approval by Parliament on the ratification of the African Telecommunications Union ATU Convention of 1999, referred to its recommends that the Council, in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the SEC Convention. Can I have proposal for adoption?
I move for the approval.
Thank you very much.
I second the approval, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson.
Honorable.
I object to the approval and ask that it be a
order. Take note.
What?
Object.
Object
is very wide. You object.
It has been noted.
can we proceed with the next one? The Select Committee on Communications in Public Enterprises, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the final act of the Plenipotentiary Conference of the International Telecommunications Union, ITU, Guadalajara. Recommends that the council, in terms of section 231(2) of the constitution, approve the set agreement. I ask for someone to move for the motion. Honorable Malambo and Honorable Kapa.
Can you please propose? I have proposed.
Thank you, honorable members. Those are the reports, and with this, we are finished, done with communication, the rectification of the two reports. Honorable Minister, if you want to be excused, you're welcome.
Thank you
very much. You and your department. Thank you.
And they'll have my efficient friend from center.
I propose that maybe we have to have an opportunity sometime to reflect about some of these things when we're dealing with serious matters like the ratification. Well, you noted the objection. I'm basing it on what happened yesterday. Yesterday we had a very fruitful workshop where speakers and chief groups of all the provinces of South Africa were part of the workshop. And we're discussing our role in terms of the constitution. And I think out of what transpired yesterday, it can assist us as a committee at a stage to reflect, to understand.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think it's very important that we do understand our role. And like you were saying, we had a very fruitful in the action to make us understand of our constitutional role as CIS committee. Thank you very much.
Sorry,
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for taking care of the women. We must make sure that the women's voices are being taken. I hope that the DG is taking note of it. But can we allow the department to proceed with the presentation? Do you need to?
the rebroadcast of the parliamentary channel by some of the community broadcasters. So we do give a breakdown then of the FM services which are provided by community broadcasting. It breaks down by provinces where you've got KZN, Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng Province, Limpopo Northwest, and Western Cape and Mpumalanga. The total of those 121 community broadcasting services or licenses. And we do indicate in terms of the pictorial presentation on the map as to the breakdown of these community broadcasters. And you will know that from a radio perspective, the majority of the broadcasters are in the area of KZN, followed by Eastern Cape, and then the Northern Cape is the third one in terms of the number of community broadcasters. If you think back in terms of the origin of community broadcasting, it dates back to the IBA Act of 1993, where the community broadcasting sector was born, and there were two categories which were given for community broadcasters. It was the community of interest, and it was the geographic communities. So the regulator has been licensing these community broadcasters on the basis of that, of the ECA now, which was the legislation that succeeded the IBA Act and the Telecommunications Act. The community broadcasters have had a few challenges in meeting their obligations, which we do want to indicate to this committee. Some of them have managed to keep their obligation over the years, but the majority of them have struggled big time to keep their financial obligations. And here on this slide, we indicate that Sentech Transcription Network is supporting the 110 channels and 121 community services across the country. We, for all those community broadcasters, have taken a conscious decision that we shall discount our tariffs just to be able to cover the cost of operations. So the discount that we're giving you the net on that line, it ranges between 35% and 44%, where we're saying, depending on the cost of the transmitter that is being used, each community broadcaster then receives a discount, which we, in assessing their level of affordability, then we provide them with a discount factor. So we did this differentiated tariff structure because we knew that community broadcasters would battle with covering the full cost plus the margin that we put on all our services. So if you look at what's happened in the previous years, Jefferson, you will note that from a linking perspective, which is what we link from studio to the transmitter side, over the past four financial years, the total that's being owed by the community broadcaster, or discounted rather, to the community broadcaster, has been more than R1 million. And if you look at overall, the total cost to the company, which is our contribution towards the broadcasting sector, is in excess of R50 million, so it's R57 million in total that we contribute towards the broadcasting sector. You'll probably note at the bottom there and ask the question, why is it so expensive to do the parliamentary channel? It is because we link it, or we feed the transmitter side via satellite, and therefore the cost is a bit higher than the normal terrestrial linking. So we do want to put it on the committee that Sentech as an organization has made a contribution towards the success of community broadcasters, but it is a mandate which we cannot carry without funding. In terms of what's happened with community broadcasting, TV and radio, the funding in 2015, the Department of Communications issued a draft documentation and methodology of funding of community broadcasters. Then we did an industry engagement to make sure that people understand their roles and maybe make contributions towards the success of community broadcasting. And then we did a tariff differentiation, which really looked at the analog tariff for all community broadcasters, and also looked at the DTT tariffs, because if you remember the regulations around DTT, which is your digital TV for community broadcasters, they have been allocated capacity on the channel for digital broadcasting. When that happens, it requires them to expand their network, because you cannot disaggregate them from the digital transmission multiplex. So that will imply that, moving to the next slide, that the community TV broadcasters will pay more than they have been paying before. So if you look at the tariff there, currently they will be paying 400. If you look at KMTV, 474 million, so 1,000. And then when we put them on digital, it was an expansion of coverage and capacity. They won't only have one channel. They'll have more than one channel, and therefore their tariffs will increase. So our challenge then is, if they are battling now with single channels in the analog world, how much more will they battle with those figures that we're looking at on the digital platform? And therefore, it really requires a very concerted effort from the government to decide on the future of community broadcasting, as to how we're going to fund it into the future. So looking at all those channels, 1KZN, TBN, there is an increase in the tariffs. So therefore, Chairperson and members of the committee, we want to present a case then that says community broadcasters are being carried by Centec, and there is a commitment from Centec towards the success of community broadcasters. But we will hopefully by the end of the financial year have concluded some discussions with the Department of Communications and our Minister Mutambi, where they will hopefully come up with an approach to funding community media. But we are not there yet, so we're still waiting maybe for further decisions to be taken at the departmental level in collaboration with our department, the DTPS. So that is really where we are with community broadcasters. Now, I do want to conclude on the presentation of community broadcasters by alerting the committee that we had to take a decision as the board of the organization, chaired by our chairman, Melo, that we have to take our responsibility as directors and act and notify the community broadcasters that it is not affordable for us to carry on carrying them without paying for their services. We did agree with the DG that we'll work on this and come up with some solution to move forward into the future of funding of the community broadcasters. But the message really that I want to communicate on the community broadcaster to indicate the kind of a crisis situation that we may face is that to date the community broadcasters are owing the company 14 million rand. So that is the level of debt which the community broadcasters have exposed us to. We have to deal with that into the future and see how we cover that deficit moving forward. Let me move on, therefore, away from community broadcasting, Honorable Chairperson and members, and move to the issue of the digital migration, as you've requested us to give you an update on what's happening with digital migration. I think I do want to indicate that we have to look at the value chain for digital migration and understand where Centec fits in. Centec being an infrastructure company, we have a mandate and a responsibility to deliver the infrastructure that will digitize television content and provide a replica initially of all television coverage in the country. And we have done that. If you look at that slide, we basically cover the whole country with a digital network, which has been running since 2008. And that network covers about 87% of the country, and the balance is covered by satellite. And that balance covers areas which are supposed to be radio quiet, like the square kilometer array areas in the Northern Cape. So we cannot have terrestrial transmitters in that area. So we've started with it in terms of our prioritizing of the migration process. So in terms of coverage, we do want to present a position that centered over the past number of years since 2008. We've covered the nation in full. We left with one site in the northern province, which is Beaverford. You probably have heard some of the issues that have stalled the project in Beaverford, but we're dealing with that with the provincial authorities so that we can be able to complete our site in the next 3 months or so. So coverage is complete, and that's the message that we would like to communicate with the honorable committee members. Now, if we look at what has been happening from the Centex perspective, since we're saying that the network is completed, we need to now move on to a stage of stabilizing and creating an efficient, monitorable, manageable network. And we then made the decision as an organization that we've got to build a network management system that will enable us to monitor each and every site remotely and change configurations from wherever the sites are. By the end of this financial year, we'll complete that project. And also we are doing an upgrade of our head end, which is really the heart of our network, which is in the Honeydew, our head office. So by the end of March, we would have completed the upgrade of our network, or rather of our head end, which is the heart of our network. And then thirdly, because we need to provide some insurance for our network so that in the event of disaster, we are able to recover. That's why we have established a disaster recovery site, so that we can have two hearts beating at the same time, so that if one fails, we can flip over to the other one. So that's the network disaster recovery project that we'll complete by the end of the financial year. And lastly, because we do want to, first of all, promote the skill development in the digital space, because we don't have sufficient skills in that space. And also we want to do simulation of what happens in the field. And that's why we then decided that we will have a laboratory which we use for those purposes, so that we can do quick simulation of what is happening in the field, and then enable our technicians and engineers, whenever there's a problem in the field, then they would have known about it because they would have tested it in the laboratory. So we're completing our laboratory project by the end of the financial year. In terms of the switch, analog switch off, Honorable Shepherdson, it's one of those issues that we can only program, but because if you recall, I said on the value chain, we are on the infrastructure side, but on the end user side, we don't participate. And we have therefore decided to, I think much earlier on, this was communicated to all the stakeholders in the industry, that the analog switch off plan has to follow a certain sequence. And the motivation for following that sequence is that we need to clear the square kilometer array area, and also we need to protect the area which is around the borders to prevent interference between ourselves and our neighbors who may have migrated already to digital whilst we're busy doing still carrying on with our analog transmission. So that sequence therefore of events, phase one being the Northern Cape, and then we do Mpumalanga and Limpopo and Northwest, you see that we're dealing with the provinces which are around our borders first, and then we do Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and then end with Gauteng. By the time we get to those major cities which are more outside, away from the borders, we'd have had sufficient experience and debug everything that we may have faced as we were continuing switching off analog in those areas which are across the borders. In terms of the current activities on analog switch off, you may have noted that the Minister of Communications in December, I think December 18th, switched off, there was a ceremony to switch off transmitter site in Carnarvon in the Northern Cape. That low power site was switched off. But we therefore, and then at Centec, we continue to switch off other sites in that area. And the aim is then that by the end of this financial year, the area in the SKA, square kilometer array area, must have been switched off. So all this switching off process has got one condition to it, is that the users must have a receiving device so that they can be able to receive a digital signal. So if you then look at what we are saying is that as an organization, also as government, we need to make sure that there's sufficient awareness about DTT. So the government or the DOC is doing those awareness campaigns, and also that there must be availability of set-top boxes and network readiness. That's our responsibility. We're confirming to you that our network is ready to deliver what it delivers. The call center and migration support centers, those are the areas which are required for the success of DTT, but they require specific mandate funding, which we are hoping to receive from the Department of Communications to be able to deliver the full migration. So we would like to therefore say, in terms of readiness, update on digital migration readiness, the infrastructure of this country will spend more than R1 billion on the infrastructure of the country on DTT, and that infrastructure is ready to deliver DTT. So we therefore run two networks currently, the analog and the digital. So there is a hot transmission on the digital side. So if you were to pick up a set-top box, DTT set-top box today, in whatever part of the country that you are located, you will be able to receive a DTT signal today, because we have to run those two. Now the burden that we have with our department, the DTPS, is that they will have to find some funds somewhere to support the dual illumination process, which is a cost that costs us within a region of about R150 million per annum. And we are thankful to the department for supporting us somewhere, although they couldn't go all the way, but they have managed to give us some relief in most cases. And we appreciate that. On that note, Jefferson and members, I would like to say thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think I'm going to allow the members to pose questions if there is any. Honorable Safako, Honorable Nyambi. Honorable Safako.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the presentations. Community radio stations are indeed playing very, very important role in the community. I just want to check, because this is struggling with the funding or sustaining these community radios. Is there any strategy perhaps developed that can enhance the self-sustenance of these community radio stations by perhaps encouraging local municipalities, other departments, whenever they are coming with projects, to make use of these radio stations to popularize their program, but also having something to pay to these communities? Do you have such a strategy? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. Indicated that my question is linked to the first one. We happened to visit a number of them last year, especially in Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And you can even see those were in that part of Richards Bay. They are very close, but the other one is struggling, the other one is doing very fine. So maybe if, when you organize, whether your conferences, to make sure that, because this is a very technical and complex task, even members, to be invited to assist or even to capacitate us to understand it better so that we can be able to assist you. Because when you organize your conference, sometimes you'll read about them, but if we're not participating as members of this committee, we'll ask some of the things that are outdated. So that is why I feel that Chairperson, if they can always, at all times, if it's possible, depending on availability and on our schedule, to attend some of what they are doing. And if you are breaking them down to provinces, I like what you have done, but if you can give us indications, because as members of parliament, we've got constituency offices all over. Like I'm coming from Mpumalanga, where the house that represents interests of province. So it will always assist to understand. Sometimes you are not even aware that it is a community radio station, but this is the platform that will assist us when you are reflecting that in this province you have this one, and then you indicate that you get it in this municipality, in this area, so that we can assist and even force department and the very same municipality to use them. My question is about those that are owing you, the community broadcasters. The amount is for both TV and radio, or it's only for TV? Because you just gave us a figure, so that we can have a sense. The other one is about the migration status upgrade. I can see that even where you are at 55%, but the completion date is still 30 March. Where we are at 97%, 30 March. Still under construction, 30 March. Is that realistic? It's going to be possible? Yeah. All of them, it's same date, even though they are at the different phases. Then the last one, it's about the issue of the vacancy rate at management level. The last time we checked, it was above 20%. Is it still the case? What is the current situation? Because there is no or entity that can be able to function at an open level with that vacancy rate. Otherwise, it's a presentation that is good. I commend it. It's giving us a sense to understand what is happening within CERTEC. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let's appreciate the presentation by CERTEC, and also agree with the latter speaker that the good progress that we see in terms of your presentation. Although, Chair, there's this one of your broadcasters that are unable to pay for their broadcasting fees. And I'm wondering, what is the recourse of CERTEC if they dismally fail to pay you? I'm asking this question, Chair, because as it was said by Honorable Sefako, those radio and TV stations, they are very valuable for those communities. Wouldn't like them to just get shut down. In so much that in my mind now I'm saying I'm worried that the minister is gone, because I think also politically it is a matter that we need to take up. Maybe we make a proposal to the minister in cabinet, they begin to debate how do they influence each other as ministers to utilize the community radio station and TV, and also pay, because when we're visiting those radio stations, they were complaining that, and for example, making the example about municipalities, when they go to them, they don't want to pay. But if they are comfortable with them, it's not an issue. It is understood that there will be payment. Somehow, in an element of
us making contribution to make sure that the status quo changes. The layer request gesture is so critical to know what you want them to do. Just bafuna I base to TV the salary corner. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable
Minister. I want to ask question on that one last whether after our versus I was saying that we must influence for the 30% set aside in municipalities to really support the community radio station. I think that for me is very important because they advertising in the newspapers, a lot of money is going there, but they're not supporting our people. But our people include very free services to carry out the messages. My question is on page 12. These sites that is has been switched off. Do they have set top boxes already? Is it in? And if so, how is it operating? If we just can bring me on board for you to understand. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Chairperson, I'll address some of the questions and hand over to the CEO and CEO on that. In terms of the initiative to support the community broadcaster, at the last strategy session of the board, the board, we took a resolution which says that which requested essentially to the executive management to say that they should rethink the enterprise development strategy of the company and focus that a fair amount of that on broadcasters, on creating mechanisms to provide capacity for broadcasters, because this is a the nature of the business is that this is a business that relies on advertising, that relies on a certain reach, and that and some of these broadcasters may struggle with some of those management structures that you know. So the management at Centec are looking at is the mechanisms and the most optimal structures that can be put together to support these broadcasters. So that is something that the organization is very conscious of, and there is work that is being done to address that within this coming financial year. As far as the, and part of that includes how they can market to within their territory and municipalities become, because there's symmetry between the coverage area and the municipalities, and those should be really be a very good target for revenue generation. Now, part of it is that there is certain technologies like the advertising platforms that are there, and part of it is to look at how Centec can look at assisting them to so that not every community broadcaster has to source its own technology, to help them with mechanisms to pool all these resources where they can do that. Some of these may be technically viable, some may not, but the idea is that the company's enterprise development as much as is possible be directed towards assisting these community broadcasters. As far as capacitating the committee chairperson and honorable members, we take that advice, and we will actively look at also sharing a lot of what is happening and that Centec is doing in this area, and also to share with committee members going forward. I will hand over to the CEO to address the rest of the questions with the team.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chair and members. I think the issue around Honorable Sabako has been addressed. Honorable Nyame, you asked the question around the debt amount, what is the breakdown between that and between television and radio. In majority of cases, the broadcasters who owe the company who can't pay or who are not paying, put it that way, are the audio or the radio community broadcasters largely. The TV broadcasters would at times be delayed, but they would catch up and start paying for their services. In terms of the migration status, those are our KPIs, we can't not do it. When we say as of that time of the month, we're at the percentages which we've indicated, that's the percentage completion on that time. But because of the size of these projects, the last part of it is being completed in this last quarter of the financial year. And come end of March, we're going to have 100% completion in all those projects. So we're very confident that we will not drop the ball on that one at all. You also spoke to the issue around the vacancy rate at management level, and you're quoting the previous numbers of 20%. Currently, we've managed to close the gap in terms of vacancies within the organization. At senior management level, we have one vacancy now, which is as a result of the lapsing of the contract of one executive, so we're busy recruiting to fill that position. That's just one. Generally within the organization, if you look at the vacancy rate overall, is around 8%, which is a number that is manageable, and all the critical positions within the organization have been filled, so there's no challenge that is being faced from a human resources management perspective. There was a question from Honorable Munita on what is the recourse that CENTEC has. I think CENTEC contractually and in law has a recourse to cease providing a service to a party who is not honoring their side of the contract. That's in terms of the law. But we take a different view that says we can execute our legal right as a company, but we have to look at the social implications of that as well. And that is why we've stalled executing, although we've given notification and put on terms the broadcasters and said, if you don't fulfill your obligation by this date, the service will be terminated. But so far we have not executed that on the community broadcaster side. So we obviously we are not saying to community broadcasters we are not going to exercise our right. We will in due course, but we're trying to find solutions before we can even look at the legal side, which because of the nature, I think it's been said that they play a vital role, and we know that because we come from those communities ourselves. So the recourse then is for us to resort to law as a last resort, but the first approach is to find a solution from the government departments to see if there's something that can be done. And I think as the chairperson has said, we have to look beyond. We've done this before, by the way, committee members. I would like to stress that in the last financial year, we made a very significant contribution towards community broadcasters as part of our economic development strategy. So we don't remember the numbers now, maybe the CEO can remind us, but it was more than 20 million rand that we spent on providing support to community broadcasters in the last financial year as part of our economic development plan or execution of plan. I think the last question from the chairperson was, in those areas where we've switched off, which is in the Northern Cape, what is the current situation? We have two situations in the SKA area. We have those communities who receive their signal via satellite and those who receive from a terrestrial transmission. and the Department of Communication had provided all those users or communities, homes in that area, with set-top boxes. So all of them in the area where we have switched off, they are able to receive the free-to-air television as they were receiving by terrestrial. So we're doing that replication after switch off. We have not received any reports that are contradicting that statement thus far, and we've got our teams on the ground who keep monitoring and getting feedback. Our technical contact center does receive feedback if there's any technical issues in the area. But for now, yes, we all those communities are receiving the signal via the DTT STB set-top boxes which were provided to them by the government.
Just
one more point from my colleague to finish our responses and then.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just to add on an issue that Honorable Sefa was asked, we were working very, very closely with the MDDA, which is the Media Diversity, some Media Development and Diversity Agency that falls under the Department of Communication. Their job is to make sure that there's diversity of media in the country. So we are working very, very closely with them to find a solution for the community broadcasters. So they are hosting a session, and they've been instructed to by the minister to host the session before the end of March. So perhaps I think maybe advisable for the community then to interact with them so that we get invited to the session. They are going to invite all the stakeholders. All the community broadcasters will be there to be able to raise the issues that they have, and then we can find a solution that the country can take forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Can I allow the
DTT? I think the point that is being made about not closing the station is accepted by us, and that's why we are in this situation. Now, at the level of the department, we will also have a bilateral with the other department, but broadcasting is a mandate of another department. So we're going to have a bilateral with that department to discuss this issue. But I think even with the difficulties that we're facing in our booths, we take the injunction from members that we must never close community administration. That is not what we're planning to do. It's a difficult situation. We are tending to it even at a bilateral level. Now we are faced with the same situation when it comes to DTT, because all these transmitters that they are referring to, they are on the ground. We have done our part in terms of rolling out the infrastructure, but this infrastructure is not being used because DTT has not started. So what we do this year, we are going to give CENTEC about 200 million to maintain that infrastructure that is not being utilized. So this is always one issue that the Minister of Communications will be able to brief members as to when DTT is going to commence. But until that happens, we have to keep on paying for the DTT infrastructure even though it's not being implemented. But we will not disappoint in terms of doing that. If it comes to a situation where perhaps we have to switch them off, I would suggest, colleagues, that we take you into confidence and inform members of Parliament that we've reached this untenable situation. We are going to do this, so you're not reading this in the media. So I can make that commitment that if it comes to that, we'll let you know.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to ask ask a question. I saw on page 5 that you reported the discount value. But for me, how much is CENTEC signal distribution service for community radio stations in radio, in television? Before you ask me, there's one other question that I want to ask. There had been reported cases of radio stations being off-air due to frequency network problems. Has CENTEC paid attention to it? And what is the situation?
No, Chair, it's to indicate that it will be good for CENTEC and the department to take advantage of the committee, because unlike ANA, that you have got different chairs of the different portfolio committees. In this case, in NCOP, both committees are chaired by one person. So it means it's convenient if where you are having some challenges to call both departments in one meeting and deal with whatever challenges. So it's more of an advantage, unlike in NA, that the other committee is in another chairperson, but in the NCOP, it's one chairperson dealing with both departments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we have shown on the table in slide number 3 is the discounts that we've given for different categories of
But it is a discount.
The actual cost, if you look at, just worked it out here, because we didn't put it on the slide. The transmission cost for radio in 2012-2013, it was 23 million. I'm giving you the overall number, 23 million. That was the transmission cost. Now,
that's for radio.
That's for community radio cost, yes. But maybe what I could do is to send you a breakdown of what it cost us for all the radio stations. Will give you a breakdown as of today. What is the total cost to us? What is the tariff? And what is the discounted cost? And then you can submit those per radio station, because it varies per power level of each community broadcaster.
Thank you very much.
Yes, we'll set it up.
Thank you.
The interference and the stations being off due to frequency problems. Well, recently we haven't had a report that says there is a single station that has been switched off because of interference. Our response to all broadcasters, it is not driven by whether or not they are community or commercial. There's a technical problem. Our technicians respond and solve the problem as it arises. So would like to, maybe if someone has reported to you and they have not reported to us, would like to plead with them that they must really contact us directly, and if you have got the name of the station, we can actually take it from you, Honorable Chair, and respond to that and resolve it.
Thank you very much. Do you want to?
Yes, just one thing, Chair. Just to clarify the question that the Honorable Member had on the percentages for March. One of those percentages is really the upgrade of a network management system, which is installed centrally. So even though one is 97, the other is 50, the one is really a system that's installed in CENTEC's head office. So that's why the expectation is that the remaining 50% will be achieved. But the core of it is what that gives you, and it relates to what the CEO has just said, which is that the management system essentially allows CENTEC to monitor and effect a lot of activities centrally, and to be able to be more responsive, and also to measure the service level agreements so that they are now based on empirical data that is extracted in real time on the network.
Thank you very much. I was just asking if I know right or wrong. It was the last time when MMDA was here. They reported this. They supported KZN television. Is it so, or is it KZN? I was just checking, because we have to go back to those communities after our visit in. Ask them what problems
were there since
our last visit.
Yes, the MDDA did indicate to us that they had limited funds to support some community broadcasters, and I think one KZN was one of them. It was not a full grant for full expense. That's why you will see them having a deficiency or a balance that is outstanding from them.
Thank you very much. Is there any other question, honorable members? If not, I think we on
just a quick comment, Chair. I think what happened from 2006, ICASA was licensing stations like you apply. If within 60 days ICASA has not processed your application, automatically you get the license. Now what we find is that there are now so many stations, even in one municipality, you can find two stations coexisting side by side. Now at the time of application, communities will tell ICASA that we'll get money from local advertisers and all those kind of the municipality advertisers. In some cases, the local local business and the municipalities sign on those applications that indeed will support the station. Now you end up with a situation whereby once the license has been issued, then the local business and the local municipality don't want to pay for the service that are rendered by them. So that is one of the challenges that members will have to look at. I understand that ICASA has imposed a moratorium on the licensing of the community radio stations in various states.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any one last thing before we close the meeting? Chair or meeting, if you want
to say? Not much, just besides thanking the committee chairperson and also taking to heart the request to manage the continue to inform this committee, and we will actively do that. And also, chairperson, to just emphasize that we also take the comments of the committee on gender and representation on in the executive. Yes.
Thank you very much. From my side, thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you very much for your commitment to really transform and adhere to the developing of our community. And thank you very much. And we will see each other, and we are going to monitor the situation of the radio. You know, the money that they owe to you, we are going to monitor it. And like the DJ was saying, they will let us know, they will inform us if they are going to take us. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
How is it?
Yes, how is it?